fake news and hoaxes desk.
What can Reddit do to stop the flow of misinformation about the coronavirus?
And Wikipedia news.
Who will win the Wikipedia edit war between China and Taiwan?
And YouTube news.
How are political campaigns using YouTube to win the 2020 election?
And Facebook news.
Is Facebook being used for political manipulation? What can Facebook do about it?
We have TikTok news.
Who is making the viral TikToks for Black History Month?
And augmented reality news.
Can AR augment NASCAR's reality? Will you be able to smell the burning rubber from that burnout?
From the podcasting desk.
What are the most popular Black Girl Magic podcasts?
And gaming news.
Why did China ban play game?
And social media and misinformation news.
What can the Center for Disease Control do to stop the flow of fake cures on social media?
All this and more coming on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
Reddit is a very popular platform for discussion and information exchange. Unfortunately, it can also be a great place to spread misinformation, conspiracy theories, and hoaxes. John Greenberg is here to talk about Reddit's efforts to quarantine coronavirus hoaxes that are being shared on some subreddits. John, what initially drew you to this topic?
Coronavirus and misinformation are so interconnected as of recently, it only made sense it is happening on Reddit. It's still new media, though I feel they have an added challenge with how different it is from more traditional social media platforms. I wanted to find out if Reddit is any different in this respect.
How is Reddit different from other social media platforms?
Reddit can be described as the internet's biggest forums. This site contains discussion on millions of topics in communities known as subreddits. Users often choose to use an online alias when they join the site instead of using a username that would be personally identifiable. Infamously, Reddit allows users to both support another user's post by upvoting or disapprove by downvoting. Users decide which posts or users are the most popular, and even the most unpopular around Reddit. On top of this, Reddit's moderation style can be described as hands-off. Users of a particular subreddit essentially nominate themselves to moderate content in that community. Social media platforms often depend on their users in order to keep their platform safe to use, though not to this degree. Reddit ultimately puts much more trust within its users compared to other social media platforms.
How does Reddit play a role into the internet's infodemic on coronavirus?
The Daily Dot laid out how coronavirus is rocking the site. Both serious and satirical discussion is taking place around the virus, from more general R news to less serious R memes. R coronavirus, R China flu, and R Wuhan flu, all keywords for COVID-19, are center stage in the site's discussion of the subject. R coronavirus and R China flu are split between 30 moderators, both subreddits accumulating hundreds of thousands of visitors over the last few weeks. Both subreddits call out the spread of disinformation in their community guidelines and place labels on false or unconfirmed information posted by users. Other than this, Reddit is receiving the same onslaught of unconfirmed news that is seen on other social media platforms.
What has Reddit personally done to provide credible information on their platform?
Reddit does acknowledge the infodemic currently taking place across the internet. Visiting R Wuhan Flu will bring users to a page signifying the subreddit has been quarantined. It's essentially a warning to turn back before viewing the hideous content being shared on the subreddit. This page can be bypassed, though going through will provide users a link to the CDC's research and a banner always placed on top of the subreddit. The moderators of the Safer Coronavirus Discussion subreddits were falsely accused of being paid off by the Chinese Communist Party to spread hate towards targeted groups on the site, typical coronavirus misinformation. This subreddit came to be a safe haven for misinformation, and Reddit made the decision to mark the community as untrustworthy. The Hill reports Reddit has even called on the medical professional community to help ensure that credible information receiving the most attention on the platform. Reddit tweeted on January 30th, encouraging users to ask on a specific post on RX Science their coronavirus questions. Reddit is joining the major social media platforms in the war on coronavirus misinformation. Despite this, Reddit still has a long way to go to making credible information first and foremost on the platform. For Global Media News, I'm John Greenberg. Back to you, Catherine.
Thanks, John. Another major source of information on every topic is Wikipedia. Wikipedia content is created by user volunteers who create, edit, and re-edit Wikipedia entries. Recently, there has been a battle between China and Taiwan over Wikipedia pages that are politically sensitive to Taiwanese and Chinese governments. James Griffo is here to explain. James, what are some of the pages that are in contention?
Thanks, Catherine. A couple of pages that had seen an astounding amount of edits were the Hong Kong protests, in which Wikipedia had seen 65 of them in a single day. But also, the death toll was also constantly changed on this same page. And the BBC reported also that almost 1,600 Chinese-biased edits were made across 22 politically sensitive articles.
Do people think it's a coordinated attack?
Some people do. I think people around the world, specifically, I think also here in the U.S. as well, because there's been coordinated attacks on, as I previously reported, coordinated attacks with U.S. election systems from several countries. So this is another example of that.
Is it surprising that China is doing this?
Not really, because when it comes to censorship, China has had a history of blocking specifically print media. But especially now with the digital age, the internet has become the primary source of censorship. The Guardian reported that Google has tried to relaunch search in China regarding the 1989 Tiananmen Square protests, but faced a lot of public backlash from employees, politicians, and even human rights defenders. So it's not really that surprising to see that they're censoring such like really vital information that could impact the rest of the world.
Will there be an end to this?
Probably not. I think as long as China keeps on, their government has sent this really, I mean, since like the 1940s in which Mao Zedong, took reign, they constantly battled with Taiwan over what's called cross-strait relations, which is just like a term for China and Taiwan's relations over the years. So, I mean, an example of this is, Taiwan is known as the Republic of China, while China is known as the People's Republic. And, that's one of the main examples. And it's, it probably won't end anytime soon. For Global Media News, I'm James Griffo. Back to you, Catherine.
Thank you, James. How are political campaigns advertising on YouTube? What are YouTube's policies regarding political advertising and just how influential will YouTube be on presidential elections?
Oscar Martinez is on the YouTube and politics beat for Global Media News this week. YouTube is a major source of news and information. Many Americans get their political information by watching YouTube videos. Presidential campaigns are also using these videos to promote their candidates. Oscar, is there a lot of political advertising on YouTube in this election cycle?
Yes, there is. The main people behind that are the billionaires that are behind the political campaign right now. Bloomberg himself has spent over $500 million in this campaign. Tom Steyer has spent over $100 million, yet though his focus has only been in one state, and Trump has also bought a lot of ads.
So, Oscar, in what ways have they used these ads?
Bloomberg has spent these political ads in trying to persuade people, the undecided voters, in these campaigns. He hoped that with all the political ads he's put out, he could persuade anybody who doesn't know who to vote for to go online, look up like all these campaign, and then they'll see his ads. And then he presents himself very professional. In that way, he hopes to convince people watching his ads that he could be president. Trump has bought an ad space on the days leading up to the election, hoping that anybody who's looking up the candidates before the election will look at his ads, they'll be convinced, just the way Bloomberg has.
Do you think it is effective buying a lot of these ads?
Trump has the advantage that he's a president going up for re-election in his own party. He's very popular. So that gives him a bunch of advantage that he'll get votes. On the Democrat side, Bloomberg, he hasn't shown himself to be very good outside of the ads. He flopped in all of the debates, which has made people not go for him. Recently on Super Tuesday, he only won one. He didn't win any states. He only won his territory, the American Samoa. Tom Steyer, another billionaire, got nothing. I would say, unless somebody could really present themselves as presentable, electable, as a president, is not that very effective. Bloomberg has said that, Bloomberg has dropped out of the race, but he has said that before he endorsed Joe Biden, he told everybody that he would put all the spending efforts that he put on himself to whoever he endorsed. So he's going to be putting political ads now for Joe Biden. So we'll see if it be effective then. For Global Media News, I'm Oscar Martinez. Back to you, James.
Thanks, Oscar. Is there an art to using Facebook for political manipulation? Luca DiMatteo is here to report about Facebook's role in the election. Luca, what was the first source that you found on this topic?
The first source I found was an article online posted by Time Magazine. They reported personal data from Facebook is being used by companies to manipulate voters and to distort democratic disclosure. Personal information safety is a driving force for political campaigning. The fact that social media platforms, specifically Facebook, sell their users' information to social media monitoring firms proves that nothing is truly ever private.
What was the Cambridge Analytica scandal? Did Facebook know? And what has been done to prevent future issues?
The Cambridge Analytica scandal was a major issue in the social media world. The company, Cambridge Analytica, was hired to purchase and gain access to Facebook accounts and then sold them to whoever paid the highest price. They were able to gain access by using email addresses. Cambridge Analytica used personal data they collected to create a tool of psychological warfare that manipulated American voters with targeted Facebook ads. The best way to keep your account safe is by monitoring who has access and turning off cookies, the data fetching software.
What percentage of total Facebook users' accounts have been compromised and sold?
So Facebook reports having roughly 2.37 billion users. Out of those 2.37 billion, 87 million subscribers are being used as guinea pigs for political gain. So it's 3.6% of their entire user population.
What is lookalike audiences, and how can you prevent your personal accounts from being a lookalike pawn?
After gaining access to as many email addresses as possible, their massive lists are created of accounts, and then they are sold to social media companies like Facebook, where said email addresses are linked to profiles and then targeted based on their location, ethnicity, age, etc. Lookalike audiences allow the company to find people that are similar to those designated in any given slice of the custom audience. Then the campaign buys ads that deliver the message that Facebook data confirms people want to hear.
Because accounts are sold to political campaigns, do these campaignees get full access to your entire page?
No. They gain access to your likes and dislikes and what type of videos you enjoy watching. They even know what you look at on Marketplace, what your zodiac sign is, and who your name test says you're going to marry. For Global Media News, I'm Luca DiMatteo. Back to you, James.
Thank you, Luca. This February was Black History Month, and social media was full of Black History hashtags, videos, and memes. How much Black History was there on TikTok this year?
Amani Ince is looking at how Black History content was shared on social media this February. She noticed that there were a lot of viral videos on TikTok. Amani, who was posting Black History content on TikTok, and why was it so popular?
Okay, so just to kind of get into it, as we kind of close, I know it's March, but we're closing Black History Month. I just kind of wanted to broadcast and maybe even celebrate those who actually took the time to use social media to their advantage to teach Black history or to create their own history. One is Jalea Harmon. She is a 14-year-old girl born and raised in Georgia, and a lot of y'all may not know her name, but she is the creator behind the resume dance that everyone, loves to do on TikTok. She's the one that, created a not the song. She created the dance, but unfortunately, she never really gotten the credit until recently. But I just wanted to point her out because she has gotten so many views and so many people who recreated the dance and even made it on the NBA stage, which I think is amazing. That this 14-year-old girl could do something in her room and it just be broadcasted and millions upon millions of people are now taking the time out to recreate the dance that she did. And it's a stretch, but it just goes to show she created something that people can enjoy. Another one is Arium. She is another TikTok user who was using TikTok to broadcast her makeup skills, and she would recreate different makeup looks from singers, from famous people, well-known people in the early 1900s, so basically the 20th century. So people Ella Fitzgerald, Gertrude Rainey, Eartha Kitt, even some people that we know love today, like Aaliyah and Little Kim, she has took the time to recreate their looks, and then she has also, while recreating their looks, pointed out key facts about these people that many people may not even know. Others that did the same thing, unfortunately, I wasn't able to find who they are, but I did want to shout them out. I found a video on Now This that uploaded a whole bunch of black users, who took the time to get on TikTok, and recreate history and just put out history facts, black history facts that we don't know about. And I'm not just talking about black leaders like Malcolm X or Martin Luther King. It was so much more than that.
Why are these users using TikTok to teach black history?
So, with TikTok climbing the charts as it is now, starting to become one of the biggest social media platforms people use, because it has a lot of creative control, a lot of people gain more towards TikTok. Since most people use TikTok, especially younger generation, is one of the great ways for people to learn key moments and significant people in history. And it's just a more interesting way.
Why is this topic important?
Unfortunately to me, I believe it's important because unfortunately, the black community has always been shined in a negative light, especially when it comes to the media industry. Even today on social media, there are times where my people are not being seen as their best selves, especially when it comes to their appearance and, to be honest, their behavior. So it's nice to see people in the black community using social media as a beneficial thing to help themselves as well as others.
Does this make an impact on the public?
I do believe that it could. It can. If it hasn't already. Even going back to Miss Jalea, she has helped create a dance that, like I said before, helps millions and join together, create a fun time. It's something small, I know, but just looking at the bigger picture, I'm pretty sure that one dance has caused many people to recreate, to laugh, to smile while they're dancing, to just enjoy the moment. And then in terms of those who use TikTok to teach black history, that's probably taught many people new information they've never known before. Just to imagine helping thousands to even millions of people either gain some excitement or knowledge all in a 15 to 60 second video, that's amazing. Anything is possible. My name is Imani Ince for Global Media News. Back to you, Kathy.
Thanks, Imani. Let's turn from black history memes to NASCAR racing and social media. Michael Blass has a report for us about how NASCAR is using new media technologies like augmented reality to attract and keep fans watching NASCAR races. Michael, how and why would NASCAR be using augmented reality this racing season?
Thank you, Catherine. Well, we've all known NASCAR. They've been around since 1948, but haven't had their first race since the next year of June, and their first race was in Charlotte, North Carolina, and they all just keep turning left. So years go by, technology got better and better. So they sat all sat down and said, okay, how are we going to get the attention of more fans? And for fans who can't come to our event, how can we still give them something that they can do from just their little phone device that's in their pocket? So they turned to augmented reality. And with augmented reality, it's like virtual reality, but different way. Virtual reality is more of if you get like a Vive, or you have to actually be immersed in it. With augmented reality, it uses the camera, your phone's backside camera, and the computer generates an image. So like with the famous app Pokemon Go, that is actually augmented reality.
How is NASCAR benefiting from AR?
Well, NASCAR is benefiting because they'll be able to use this technology to their advantage. So they create an app called NASCAR's Burnout Experience, AR Burnout Experience. So you can get it from the App Store. I tried finding it. I could not find it. So basically what happens in the app is you can choose from any of the famous cars, like Jeff Gordon's famous number 3 car. And what happens is you'll use the camera. First time activation, it'll say, oh, can this app allow you to use your camera? So you, of course, allow it, and then the car will be placed wherever you are. So let's say you're in the campus center. You can put the car there, and you can actually scale it to a different size. And when you do the burnout, the burnout smoke that comes from it is actually real world. There's cameras that record burnout from different cars, and it goes into our server because what is happening here is with the people using the app, because you have millions of fans all across the country, and with anyone using that app, it would just slow down the server and cause it to eventually crash. So what they actually had to do was bandwidth limit each person, so this way it wouldn't have a severe crash if multiple people were on it. And what you can also do with that app is actually share the experience, and actually that's what helps the company gain more following, because you keep sharing stuff, they're gonna keep gaining more traction, and that's how this company will stick around to be this way for a while.
Is AR going to be permanent in the racing industry?
As of right now, actually, yes. According to TechReport.com, who spoke with Vice President Tim Clark, in a statement, Tim said, our goal is to bring the fans as close to the sport as possible. And augmented reality was an ideal medium to help us accomplish that as we look to engage the fans of both today and tomorrow. So just from that excerpt there, from what Tim Clark said, AR is to stay, because that technology is just the way of the future of helping industries keep building and building and not kind of have a drought. For Global Media News, I'm Michael Blass. Back to you, Catherine.
Thanks, Michael. Next, we're going to talk podcasting with Melania Marquez. What are the hottest hashtag Black Girl Magic podcasts right now?
There are many, many types of podcasts. One very popular genre are hashtag Black Girl Magic podcasts. Melania Marquez is here to explain. Melania, can you tell us something about this hashtag, Black Girl Magic?
Well, the hashtag Black Girl Magic started about 7 years ago by Kashawn Thompson. It's actually not a hashtag. It's a movement, and it started getting a lot of recognition on social media, and that's when social media started celebrating the beauty and the power and the resilience of Black women. When you see a Black girl doing good and achieving certain things for the greater good, that's when you say, okay, that's Black Girl Magic, and that's what the movement's about.
All right, so let's talk about the podcast industry. How do you feel about it and its growth and diversity?
Okay, so thousands of podcasts are created every day, and it could be difficult finding one that caters to you and your needs. And it was like this for many years for Black people because of the lack of diversity on a platform. So Black women specifically began to fill the void that was missing, and they started creating podcasts, and they started having relatable and relevant conversations that was needed in the Black community. So once people began to see the success and the realness of these podcasts, the more diversity you saw all around. In fact, I think that's what makes podcasts so successful and great today, because of the diversity you saw beyond the years. You know, you just started seeing it more and more.
So what are your 4 best hashtag Black Girl Magic podcasts, and what makes them the best?
Okay, So my favorite podcasts are podcasts that cater to my needs, the ones I can listen to for fun, for motivation, a good cry, a good laugh, or even like a new open mind. We have the Black Girl Podcast with Hot 97, Scotty Beam, Alicia P, Beggs, and Sapphire M. This one is personally my favorite because these ladies are young, they're popping, and they're helping other girls in the media industry too, sharing their experiences, being transparent, and giving advice, so that really helps me. I personally work with them, and the same conversations that they have on the podcast is the same conversations that they had with me. So that's awesome. Another one that I have is Power 105.1's Angelina's Lip Service. That feeds, like, you know, your sexy and fun thoughts. Actually talks about relationships and what goes on in the bedroom. To help me on my Christian spiritual journey, I have Minister Sarah Jake Roberts. Her podcast is called Woman Evolved. And she'll literally, like, read you, like, a book. Like, it's like she knows you. Like, she's your best friend. So if she's addressing topics that relate to me, then that means that there's other Black women going through what I go through, that have the same struggles and that want to do good. And if you need a good laugh, there's also two dope queens with Jessica Williams and Phoebe Robinson. They will literally have you cracking up. I mean, they use relevant topics that are kind of serious in the media, but they put some humor to it. So they take like the seriousness and they lighten the world up a little bit. So that's why I like their podcast. As you can see, my four favorite Black girl podcasts cater to pieces of me, and I encourage everybody to tap in and check these podcasts out so they can change your life too. And add them to your daily commute. Add them to your workout session. Add them as you're running errands. Like you'll see the magic. You'll see the Black girl magic.
So why is it important to have diversity on media platforms such as podcasts?
It's important because when you see diversity, it inspires. Without diversity, there's ignorance. The podcast I stated, Black Girls Like Me needed that. Because if we don't see it, if we don't listen to the conversations, then who are we going to look up to? And how would we ever be successful like that? And it's not just like the Black community either. Like, all races can listen to these podcasts. And you can get a new insight, enjoy the content, learn about Black people, and you'll see the less ignorance there is in the world. That's life-changing. That's why I call them Life-Changing Black Girl Magic Podcasts, because it changes the world and how people view it. That's all I have for today. So, for Global Media News, I'm Melania Marquez. Back to you, James.
Thanks, Melania. My co-host, Catherine Frame, is here to talk about gaming and censorship in China, specifically the banning of a game called Plague Inc. Catherine, tell us something about this game.
Well, James, Plague Inc. is a strategy game where you create a pathogen, like bacteria, virus, whatever, and basically the goal is to infect the entire Earth. Everyone's infected before they create a cure that destroys the pathogen. This app was created 8 years ago by a small company called Endemic, and it recently increased in popularity ever since the outbreak of the coronavirus.
So why did the Cyberspace Administration of China ban Plague Inc.?
The Cyberspace Administration of China ruled Plague Inc. to have illegal content on the app, but didn't really explain much into it why they called it illegal. The app was removed immediately by the government in China off the App Store, and we aren't sure if the app was removed because of media sensationalizing the coronavirus or just to take away more fear in its China citizens. Like, it's very on point exactly how it is today, the game. It's really fun. You should try it.
So what is Endemic's plan for the app right now?
Endemic said they have no power to bring the game back to the App Store for its fans, but they are working with the Cyberspace Administration of China, and they're doing anything they can to take out any content that is considered illegal. They aren't sure when the app will be available for download again, but again, they're doing everything in their power to work with the Cyberspace Administration to bring the game back as soon as possible. For Global Media News, I'm Catherine Frame. Back to you, James.
Thanks, Catherine. let's talk about social media misinformation, the coronavirus, and the Center for Disease Control, Ozzy Asif. The CDC is very concerned about all the rumors and misinformation on the internet, and especially on social media. Ozzy, what is the problem that the CDC is now calling an infodemic?
Oh, there are a lot of problems because the coronavirus is affecting many people, and news outlets are spreading fake news or things that aren't true, but most of it, it's like not balanced. Some things can be true, and some things can be a hoax. If you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. So how did the coronavirus affect Amazon specifically?
It affected Amazon because people tried profiting off misleading news. Sellers claimed that face masks will work by countering the virus, which isn't true. Amazon has blocked and removed 1 million products sold by third-party sellers, so it can stop the spread of misleading claims of coronavirus. Amazon targeted a seller who was selling surgical face masks and wanted to remove the product because it was making false medical claims on how it will protect you, according to CNBC. Twitter and YouTube are also involved because so many conspiracies and fake videos are spread all over Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, whether they're viral videos or even social media influencers creating memes.
So what exactly is an infodemic?
According to the World Health Organization, as stated on CNN, an infodemic is an excess information which may be true or a hoax. This makes it hard for us to find reliable sources because it's flooded with fake news. Digital misinformation campaigns are also becoming more popular, but Facebook said that they will be removing content that will make false claims of the coronavirus because of the confusion caused by these posts.
Has there been a policy to stop the spreading of fake news over the coronavirus?
Well, currently there is no policy that will stop the spreading of political misinformation. So these videos or posts like are very crucial by creating hysteria and misleading the public. But a lot of things are true, like the 11 people that just died in the U.S., like in our country, it's crazy. Like 11 people just passed away from this virus, and I hope we find a vaccine for it soon because there's a race to get a new vaccine. I think that there's a lot of accurate information, but there's a couple sources which could be like a hoax. For Global Media News, I'm Ozzy Asif. Back to you, James.
Thank you, Ozzy. That's it for this week. Thanks to my co-host, Catherine Frame. Thanks to our producer and engineer, Brennan LaRaja.
Thanks, James. Today we heard reports from Ozzy Asif, Michael Glass, Luca DiMatteo, Catherine Frame, John Greenberg, James Griffo, Amani Ince, Melania Marquez, and Oscar Martinez.
Global Media News is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts at globalmedianews.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's at OWWRGMN.
Stay tuned for more great programming coming up next on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio.